this radio station by calling 212-209-2950. Again, the number is 212-209-2950, or go to give to the number 2 WBAI.org online. All right, it's 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up.
Local telephone company trouble in the area you are calling. Your call cannot be completed at this time. Please try your call later. 078P.
Good evening, Trevor. The program is Off the Hook. It's Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, indeed. I'm present.
Good, good. And over in Skype land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
Good evening.
Well, you're signaling me, Kyle. I don't know what you want me to do. Please tell me.
Well, the Skype is a little bit hot.
A little bit hot, thank you. Yes, okay.
You're welcome.
You're waving your hands as if that's English, and I don't know what that
means. Radio semaphore.
No, but I didn't know what you meant. Okay, sorry, folks. Yeah, we haven't been on the air in a while, so we're out of practice. Yeah, another two-week gap. I guess we should welcome all our new listeners, because the only people tuning in now probably tuned in by accident. So, yeah, this is Off the Hook. We've been on the air since 1988, but... occasionally you'll find us at 7 p.m. on Wednesdays, and we talk about technology and hackers and security and all kinds of fun things like that, and we aren't afraid to say what's on our mind, right?
Ever.
Yeah. Anybody have any business they want to take care of before we get started? No? We good? Go ahead, Rob.
Go ahead. There are things on our mind. I'm just, sort of generically grateful for the people who have kept us going here on WBAI over those years since 1988, and how important it is to keep WBAI going and doing its thing with us, but also with everyone else and all our other colleagues at WBAI.
That's right. Every hour of every day, actually, except for except the middle of the day for the next week or so, I believe, when they're doing transmitter maintenance. Except for that, this radio station always has something different on. And if you don't like one program, just wait a little bit and something else will come on. And you might not like that too, but then you'll like something a lot, and then you'll like something even more after that. And before you know it, you're calling all the time to support WBAI, because we've been on the air since 1960 doing things like this when nobody else would dare. Yeah, let that sink in. Okay, we have some interesting news that's coming down the pike. Where do we start? Okay, I'm going to go out on a limb here. and talk about this particular thing. And I might not land on the right side. I might have some disagreements with people here. But there's this new TV show apparently called Ring Nation. And there was a piece in Vice that just ran. I'll just read the beginning of it. On Tuesday, 40 civil rights groups published an open letter calling on MGM television executives to cancel the studio's upcoming reality show Ring Nation, which will feature former NSA employee and comedian Wanda Sykes. Wanda Sykes worked for the NSA?
Yeah, I'm sure.
You knew that? I didn't know that. I thought she was a comedian.
It's a great way to get into comedy. No, I didn't know that.
Okay,
I never know that.
Don't make like you do then. Okay, so did anybody know Wanda Sykes used to work for the NSA? Okay. Well, that's what it says here. This is the first time seeing that. Former NSA employee and comedian Wanda Sykes presenting humorous surveillance footage captured from Ring doorbell cameras. Now, the groups say the studio is normalizing and promoting Amazon Ring's dangerous network of surveillance cameras, which, along with the Neighbors app, violate basic privacy rights, fuel surveillance-based policing that disproportionately targets people of color and threatens abortion seekers, and enables vigilantes to surveil their neighbors and racially profile bystanders. Okay, you know, this is the kind of thing that I really think makes us look bad. Because what would I mean? Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a program where people have their little Ring doorbell things. They see something funny, and they send it in. And here we're basically bringing up privacy rights. We're bringing up all kinds of surveillance, abortion seekers, people who are disenfranchised, people of color, and all that. It's they're sending them in voluntarily. It's not like they're being taken from their homes without their consent. They bought the product. Yes, I know it's owned by Amazon. I know Amazon is evil. But when you put yourself out here like this, all the rest of the country sees is that these people are trying to cancel a popular TV show just because they don't like the product. Look, there are important issues here, and Ring surveillance is an important issue, but it doesn't mean that we should just try and shut down anything related to it that involves what people are doing themselves with the devices that they bought. Now, am I getting this wrong? Am I not understanding the story? Gila, go ahead.
Oh, well, the first thing I was going to say was Wanda Sykes worked for the NSA 30 years ago.
Okay,
she has not worked for the NSA since 1992. It was her first job out of college. She worked there for 5 years. Then her comedy career started taking off. She left the NSA. So that's piece number one. It's 30 years ago. So
first
I think
job
maybe,
out of college was NSA. My first job out of college was a dishwasher. Wow. Okay, fine. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I think that's a piece of it. And honestly, you know, if we're going to be talking about what Amazon thinks will be an interesting corporate synergy cross-promotional version of America's Funniest Home Videos, which I'm assuming is where they're trying to go with Ring Nation.
Right.
You know, is that more or less problematic than something like Cops, than something like PD, Live PD, all these pieces that really people have no control over appearing in? I think that's an interesting, pardon me. Add a hiccup. Yes, but it looked like you were going to say something.
Well, Cops, I definitely have issues with. But again, if you try and take Cops off the air, it doesn't land right with most people in the country. They just see people taking a TV show off the air because they don't like what they see on it, rather than attacking what's wrong with the show week by week and offering counterpoints and things like that. But just, you know, silencing it because you don't like the product. I just don't think that's the right move. Now, you know, one thing I would have a problem with, this is called Ring Nation. Does that mean that if you have a different kind of doorbell app that records people coming to your door? And yes, they do have control if they're on the thing. If they come to your door, they're going to be recorded. I mean, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if I was recorded knocking on somebody's door. I just wouldn't be surprised these days. But if you use something else that's not Ring, is it disqualified because it's not the right brand? I'd have a problem with that. So, you know, that's how I could get on board this bandwagon.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Kyle. Sorry.
Well, it just seems that it could spread more awareness and making it more open to other things that are surveilled privately and depends on how they're talking about this particular service, and maybe the people's understanding will be a little bit deeper of the issues at play instead of people tearing it down like before it's even been out there at all.
Well, that's the thing. It hasn't aired yet. So, you know, I don't know what the format is going to be. I mean, this whole thing of Wanda Sykes working for the NSA, why'd they mention that in the story? Why'd they say former NSA employee if that was her first job out of college and it was 30 years ago? Was it 30 years ago? And a long time ago, and I don't think she carries that around with her today, and I never heard that before. It just seems like kind of unfair ammunition to be using in the story to make you think, okay, this is bad. And, I certainly believe that the Ring network that police use is a very bad thing, where they basically is it without the permission of the people who have the cameras, or do they consent to it? See, I don't have a Ring device, so I don't know these things. Alex, do you know?
I think in certain instances, or at least there's been reporting that in certain instances, the Ring surveillance footage was provided to law enforcement without the consent or knowledge of the customer. And that's because a lot of that data is stored in Amazon's cloud. So, you know, it's not necessarily on a local device, so they have access to that. And my beef here is, I think, similar to yours, Emmanuel, in that I don't see it necessarily as inherently evil or bad, but there is this something that's deeply unsettling to me, which is the notion of surveillance as entertainment. And the normalization of the fact that we're always on camera everywhere we go at any time forever.
Mm-hmm.
When you come up to somebody's house, you have, I mean, just this expectation of privacy that we had 20, 30 years ago doesn't exist and can't even be fathomed by people that were born, I think, you know, after 1990. So it's a terrible thing, I think, to normalize.
Well, that's a great point. But if you don't air something like this, the cameras are still there. All you're doing is making it so people aren't aware that the cameras are there. If you have a show like this, everyone's going to know there's cameras everywhere. Doesn't change the circumstance, but it does raise awareness about it.
Yeah, perhaps. But, I mean, the flip side of that is the cameras are out there, and, hey, they're funny. This is great. This is entertainment. And so it normalizes it and makes it fun, or funny in the sense, and entertainment. And I think that's the danger here from a privacy perspective, is that, yeah, the cameras are still there, but they're not seen as dangerous anymore. They're seen as fun.
Well, it's really the opinion of the person who owns the camera. If they think it's fun, you know, if the police department was the ones sending in the footage, saying, you know, look what happened at this particular door, yeah, that'd be a huge problem. But these are people that have their own cameras saying, I thought this was funny. The other day, out on Long Island, this cat came home after several weeks out and rang the doorbell, and it was captured on Ring. I mean, do you want us to be deprived of moments like that?
I know. What a great time to be alive, huh?
It's a smart cat, too. Rob, go ahead.
Talking of smart cats, this is a huge sort of forceful leveraging of Amazon's monopolies. Amazon owns Big Fish Entertainment, which is the production company that's making this show.
Okay.
Amazon owns MGM, which is distributing this show.
Wow.
Amazon owns Amazon Prime, where they're probably going to air this show. And also Amazon owns Ring. So they're using basically their powerful media empire to push their own security product. Talking about America's Funniest Home Videos, we all remember people back in those days, those of us who were around and watching that show, how many people bought camcorders because of America's Funniest Home Videos, and they wanted to tape the next big funny thing that went that era's version of viral. It sort of demystified camcorders for a lot of people and really normalized it as a thing that you should have as a, you know, red-blooded American consumer. And this is doing this with Ring, which is, you know, it's powerful. It's a powerful tool. It's also a powerfully misused tool, and it's in the hands of a production company which has a history of making the show Live PD, which was which had its own sort of really prominent problems in how it was produced, because it was streaming interactions with cops live, which was not giving the people captured, you know, sort of their fair share at being innocent until proven guilty. It was just, hey, look at these yokels, and the hero cops are busting them. It was canceled in the wake of the George Floyd protests last year, or the year before last, rather. But they quietly brought it back as another show called On Patrol, which is the same thing.
Well, you know, I can see a risk, like what you're discussing here, where people are so enthralled by this that they not only have Ring, but they have cameras all over their house and outside because they think something funny might happen somewhere. So so they're constantly filming. That could definitely be a social problem. But, you know, I think we're kind of moving in that direction without Amazon's help already. We have cameras every place where it's being normalized. And, you know, when we say that, yeah, they own the distributor, they own the production company, they own the method of getting the video out, they own the cameras, I mean, they own it all already. Can we really say, no, you shouldn't be allowed to use all of that? I mean, the real question should have been raised when they were buying all these things. You know, if there's some kind of monopoly that they're engaging in, that's where you raise the question. Well, when they actually start to use these tools that they already own, I'm not sure it's a really good argument. Go ahead, Gila.
I think beyond that, at least for me, there's issues of monopoly, but also of balkanization. And I think the fact that every media company and their mother decided to set up a 24-hour on-demand streaming service, there's not enough content to support all of these things, unless I think we're heading for the Truman Show soon. I really do, because we're running out of program ideas. So Amazon's like, hey, we can do this. Cool. We've got all these cameras everywhere. And yeah, this is also going to demystify it and defang it in a lot of ways, which make it scarier. But then when they run out of content, or they're just going to go into the bank by themselves and say, oh, hey, this looks fun. You know, I knew someone who had a Ring doorbell years ago on their apartment. They lived in a 24-hour doorman building, but also wanted a Ring doorbell and would just sometimes check in from work to see if anybody was at their door. I don't know why. Like, this was their very own Ring Nation program.
Wait, they would check in? Wouldn't it contact them if somebody was at their door? They would have to check themselves?
No, just, you know, they would just check the feed throughout the day, just okay, for funsies. Uh-huh. And yes, then if someone checked in. But again, if you have a 24-hour doorman at your building, probably not going to be a lot of people at your door in the first place, except your neighbors. Are you spying on your neighbors? Is this the plan?
Well, who else are you going to spy on? Of course you're going to spy on
clearly,
neighbors.
Clearly.
People are spying on their neighbors for years. But yeah, now they can save what they are spying on.
Yeah.
Time shift, it is a sort of voyeurism that is out of our control. We're not buying a standalone camcorder or something that is completely self-contained and so forth. These are machines that are communicating and running software that you don't have the same level of access to, and you're relinquishing much of how it operates to how this company is dictating, and then of course using it as content.
Well, you know, apart from a cat coming home and ringing the doorbell, I'm wondering what kind of content these people are going to find to fill an entire TV show. I mean, people aren't going to be jumping on trampolines in front of your front door. There won't be all kinds of humorous accidents and things like that. It's, you know, most of the time it's people either trying to break in or, you know, friends or just people doing boring things. So, apart from animals, okay, that's probably the number one draw. What else do they think they're going to capture? Alex?
I mean, I think content is the primary motivation here. I think you got it absolutely right. And I don't want to seem overly pugnacious towards the privacy advocates here, but I think that what Amazon has stumbled upon is essentially an inexhaustible and incredibly fertile source of content, because it's not just people delivering packages or UPS personnel doing funny dances down the porch or something like that. I mean, think about back to the 4th of July. There was this massively viral video that came from somewhere in suburbia, presumably from a Ring camera, fireworks going off behind a car that exploded and caused people to run from their port. I mean, there's car accidents, there's any number of things that happen on the street.
Right, but that's not funny. There's nothing funny about that.
I think
it could be, or you know, it could be a kangaroo jumping out of a anything that happens.
Again, animals. Yes, animals will be the leading content provider here. But what else can you do in the front door?
Anything that happens outside can happen on a Ring camera. That's a massive amount of opportunity.
Gila, go ahead.
Yeah, it could be, you know, a truck is driving down your street and it gets a flat tire, and you know it spins out. That's funny.
Is that really funny?
I think it's funny when people fall down. I am a terrible person. But I think there's also an element of what this could turn into if you think about things like the Citizen app that is a bunch of people like someone suspicious is standing outside. Like, you guys heard about the pastor in Alabama? There was a pastor in Alabama who was watering the flowers of his neighbors who were out of town.
Oh, yeah, the guy got arrested for doing that.
This man got arrested for watering the flowers because people in the neighborhood thought it looked strange.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also that neighborhood,
this
you should point
be
out,
large on.
That neighborhood is 1962. They didn't mention that in the story. They yes, never advanced.
No, so to take that and have it writ large when what you see on cameras lacks any kind of context. And that could be problematic as well.
Well, the other potential issue here, which I think maybe is more worthy of focusing on, do you give the right to use your image if something happens to you in view of someone's Ring camera and they send it in because it's humorous? It seems to me that's a violation of your rights. You know, walking down the street, you're not consenting to having your image grabbed and saved. Maybe if you go up to the front door, I don't know. I'm not sure, Alex, if the court's decided if you go up to someone's front door, do you have the expectation of privacy? I know in Texas there have been instances where people have killed somebody just for knocking on their door, and they've gotten away with it. So, you know, your mileage may vary.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. I mean, you think about when we walk around the streets of New York, and if they're doing any kind of filming, there's always some kind of disclaimer placed up that says, you know, they'll be filming here, and by going down the sidewalk or the street, you consent to your image being used in whatever is actually being filmed, right? So there's usually some kind of consent required in a public place. I think it's going to be a little bit different from a licensing perspective, I think possibly based on the jurisdiction where the cameras are located and the fact that they are very likely to be on private property.
That raises
it's going to be different.
That raises a great question, because what have they established as the criteria for signage of recording in progress, or, you know, you're being surveilled, or smile, you're on a Ring television show, tune in on this night, you know, for season 4 or whatever. You know, it's like, it doesn't seem like those are, you know, across the board required to have any kind of like lawn sign or sign next to it. So in many cases, that defeats the purpose. They want to catch, you know, or they want you to trigger some kind of light or something. So but that, as Alex pointed out, could be a situation that varies across different states, wherever the camera is placed. Is it a public street, or what percentage of the frame is private versus public? I don't know. It raises a lot of concerns, because I've never really seen like a Ring sign that says recording is going on, not in the same way that security systems or something would say, hey, you know, you better be mindful that you're being recorded.
I think that might be a very good idea, you know, and maybe this is something that the people who are fighting this can push for, is some kind of notice saying that, you know, Ring surveillance is on from this door. If you walk past this area, you will be filmed. And I see nothing wrong with that, because that's the equivalent of having, you know, burglar alarm sign warning people that you're under surveillance, but let people know about it. And that has been required in other places, other countries. I know in England there are certain rules about that. So that might be something worth battling for to actually get some changes. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, the consent issue is also going to be very interesting with this, because entertainment lawyers know all about things like image rights, personality rights, and things like that. And the whole industry is built on extensive contracts that you have to sign before something can get out there. But in the case of something like this, you know, if I'm walking up the stairs to somebody's front door and I, you know, fall comedically on my ass and it goes viral, like, who then owns that? Who then gets to sell that footage? It's going to be the person who owns the house, who owns the camera. But
it's your ass.
What if I?
It's your ass. You should get a taste. You get a taste at least.
I should get a piece of that action, or at least the option to say no. I'd rather not have this, you know, broadcast everywhere.
What kinds of activities will this encourage too? I mean, people might want to have sort of exhibition attention, exhibition.
I got it. Ring,
a whole soap opera.
Ring Theater.
Yeah, you do like it across neighborhoods, and people tune in.
Alice, can you copyright this one?
Because
the listeners go too fast sometimes, and they get our ideas before we do.
We're going to need this.
Ring Theater, spelled R-E, and basically it's a traveling troupe, that goes from city to city and puts on little performances. Kind of like they did this years ago with
surveillance camera players.
Yeah, the surveillance camera players. Maybe we could work with them as well. But we just go, you know, to people's private homes and stand in front of their front doors and engage in little plays and you know, miniature comedy scenes.
It's what they want.
Well, obviously, that's where we're moving. But, okay, you know, this is going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I just don't think trying to shut it down is the right approach because educating people is far better, getting people to reject it. That's a better method rather than saying, we don't like you because you're Amazon and because this is, you know, indicative of a bigger problem. You need people to reach that. You need people to reach that conclusion, not talk down to them. The other question I had from all this, Ring cameras, I'm not very familiar with them, but can you tell if a Ring camera is on a door? Does it show anything on the outside or is it only on the inside or is it even on the inside? Gila, do you know?
There's a thing that looks like it's a doorbell and it's about, I don't know, it's the size of a doorbell, and there's a circle on it, but that's the lens, and I think it lights up blue much in the same way as an Echo device.
So you can tell pretty easily that Echo. Okay, all right. Well, that's good, I guess, right?
Yeah, they have a pretty wide product range, and I don't want to, you know, be an infomercial for it at all, but the ability to identify is crucial, you know what you're looking at, and maybe there's different kinds of wearable lighting and things that can mess with them a little bit.
Well, look, since these things are going out and grabbing images of people in the public, how about the public also grab all the Ring cameras and make a little map as to where they all are, and maybe, you know, a Google Maps overlay or something like that? I mean, you know, if you're going to accept one, you really should accept the other. Okay, moving on. Another surveillance issue that I kind of have an issue with. Privacy groups are outraged at New York's plan to install cameras on all subway cars in a bid to stop crime. The proposal was announced by Governor Hochul yesterday as an expansion of an earlier pilot project that the governor said was working very well. Under her expanded plan, there will be two cameras in each of New York's 6,455 subway cars. Now, the reason I have an issue with this, I thought this was already done. I thought there were cameras already in all the subway cars. There seem to be cameras in all the buses. You know, I fought caller ID, and there came a time where I realized, you know what, that battle is over, and I lost. I think we're at a similar point here. I don't know what the point of getting outraged at this is. It's going to happen. People embrace it. It's happened in a lot of places already. Yeah, I really think we should just make our peace with it and fight the abuse of this. But to say don't put surveillance cameras in subway cars, I don't know. What do you guys think?
I mean, this one's an interesting one, too, because I think we have to be somewhat on the fence here, but also question the timing, the motivation, and the reasoning behind this particular proposal. I think it's very clear that having cameras on the subway would certainly have some form of deterrent effect on crime that happens on subway cars. I think we can all agree that there would be a deterrent effect, and that's one of the motivations here. But the subway crime issue really got out of hand during the first stages of the pandemic, when people weren't really riding the subway because of COVID, and then crime got out of hand. And then as people started to come back to work slowly but surely, there was much, much more crime happening on the subways. And the subways, I think we can also all agree, were a bit of a scary and weird place in the middle of the pandemic. It wasn't a fun place to be at all. There was always, you know, some jerk on every subway car not wearing a mask. And it was strange, right? But now you ride the subway and it's almost like we're back to normal in a sense. You know, there are very few people wearing masks because, you know, I don't want to say we're totally through the pandemic. That's not the argument, and it's a bit of a point.
Somebody already said that, so you wouldn't be alone if you said that now.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not sure I agree with that. But the issue I'm raising and the point I'm making here is that I think that the subway camera proposal is trying to solve a problem that is already being solved or maybe doesn't even exist anymore, which is rampant crime on the subway. And that initiatives like this, things that impact privacy, should really not be taken lightly, even though we might have thought that there were cameras before, and there are cameras on almost every single subway platform. I think that, you know, the public here should really be included in the discussion. And much like when you're erecting a new building or excavating a new site or some kind of environmental impact analysis that has to be done before you can erect a new building or drill a well or something like that, I think that for these types of initiatives, there should be some kind of privacy impact analysis or assessment that weighs the public benefit against the detriment to personal privacy. And that if we do agree, and I think it wouldn't be an unreasonable proposal to put cameras in subway cars, that this data, and I think you're right about this, Emmanuel, that on the back end of it, the data should be very highly controlled. Access to the data needs to be audited. There needs to be long trails and logs of who touched that data, why, and for what purpose, and on whose authority was access granted. Was it judicial authority? Was it executive authority? So the data itself, I think, has to be really highly regulated and certainly secure. It wasn't too long ago. I think it was just last year. We were talking about a massive breach of security cameras through through Verkada. And I think that there have to be very highly specific and narrow reasons why that data and that footage could be accessed. And it includes some kind of real-time monitoring of law enforcement. So I think accessing auditing accesses to this data and having some kind of transparency report open to the public is going to keep these subway cameras continuously in the public debate.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that I think MTA's law enforcement, they probably are the first people to handle all the video anyway as a normal part of operating. So And the point you raise about platforms, they're already chock full of cameras, like ridiculously, along with everything that's above ground and on the street level going to above ground platforms included. So it's like this is just adding coverage, and I think it's an intentional look at where there are blind spots, and I think these subway cars end up being blind spots when crime occurs on the cars themselves. And you have a great point that, you know, that a lot has to be considered as far as the overall impact and long-term handling of all of this. But one thing that strikes me is that it's not necessarily going to be a lot of retrofitting. It's more that as the subway changes some of their rolling stock and gets newer cars, this is like the default. It's built into most new subway carriages.
That's true. Gila, then Rob.
So I guess my other question is, what is the ultimate point of this existing? Is somebody going to be monitoring each of the 10,000 plus feeds that's happening at any minute? Is someone going to say, hey, something is happening, and then dispatch law enforcement to a car in the middle of a tunnel underneath the river? Like, how is this going? I'm not even thinking about privacy concerns. I'm just thinking about how on earth this is going to work and what ultimately the end game is here. Because if cameras are on platforms, is that accomplishing anything? Now I'm concerned that if our train is stopped and I lean up against my husband because it's 11 o'clock at night and now I'm taking up two seats, am I going to get a ticket in the mail? Like, are they going to match that to my Omni card and say, hey, that was you, and I'm going to get a ticket for taking up two seats on an empty subway car because there's a camera in it, Tommy?
At last, justice. Go ahead, Rob.
That ties a bit into my concern with this because, Alex, you mentioned us all basically agreeing that cameras will deter crime. I disagree. I don't think cameras are deterrents. They're not going to stop a crime from taking place. This has been borne out by studies. I'm looking at a study from 2008, a release from 2008 by the ACLU, who has concerns with this situation. And basically, cameras don't have any appreciable effect. They have not been found to have any appreciable effect on whether or not crime happens. Yes, if a crime happens, you can use the recording and try and track down who did it. If you're lucky, maybe it'll help. If you're not, like with the subway shootings in spring of this year, the cameras will be there, but people will find out afterward that half of them don't work. The NTA has already demonstrated that they're unable to keep the cameras they have working, and now we want to add thousands more.
Yeah, you see, I don't understand that argument, though, because saying that they're inept and they don't work properly, and that's the reason why we shouldn't have more, because you're not good enough at keeping them operating. It just sounds like you want them to do a better job so that they can have more cameras.
I'm not saying that that's the reason we shouldn't have them, but I'm saying that the MTA has already demonstrated they don't know how to use these things properly. But if they do, if in some perfect world these are all working, it's not going to protect people in the subway car. It's not going to stop the crime from taking place. And the sort of people who attack people on subways, who cause all kinds of mayhem and damage and things, I don't think that's the sort of person who's going to look up, see a camera, and rethink their life decisions.
Well, let's not generalize criminals, because they're all different. They come from all different backgrounds, and one person might see a camera and say, okay, I'm not going to commit this crime there. I mean, in England, not to keep harping on England, they're a surveillance state. They found that most criminals just commit their crimes off camera, but they still commit the crime. They just know where the camera is, and they go somewhere else. So, you know, we can't say for certain that it's not going to have deterrent effect. But I agree, this is mostly for after the fact. Like, for instance, the subway shooter is what everyone's pointing at, knowing if those cameras did work. I think we all wanted them to work at that point so they could find the guy quicker. But eventually they did find the person because people were looking out for a particular image. But I do think if they're working properly and something happens, they can see, okay, where did this person go and where did they go after that, but that can also be a problem for somebody who didn't commit a crime. But are we thinking that is what they are going to do with the information? Are they going to start tracking people who aren't suspected of committing crimes? How is our privacy in danger here specifically?
Well, I think that that's the reason why the data has to be extremely highly controlled and audited and can only be accessed upon certain narrow, for certain narrow reasons. You know, I think that, you know, other than crime, there's also going to be some other reasons, legitimate reasons why I think, there should be access to this particular footage if it does in fact exist in a subway car. I mean, for instance, you know, what if something happened to a child, if the child went missing, or let's say there's, you know, a person with Alzheimer's who is lost, or something happens to somebody innocuous, or something is even lost, let's say, on a subway platform. Somebody left something valuable. You know, there's all these other reasons why I think CCTV footage could be helpful in certain ways, but I also tend to disagree, you know, with the ACLU's commissioned, you know, report on this as well, Rob, in the sense that I can agree to a certain extent that, yes, there's still going to be crime on subways and cameras aren't going to solve it all. But I do think it will deter certain people from committing offenses that they would otherwise have gotten away with. And I think it will also deter people from minor annoyances, things like, you know, harassment. I think it will also decrease the type of and severity of harassment that women would be subjected to on subway cars as well, because if you know you're being monitored, you're going to regulate your own behavior. But it does not get away from the fact that, you know, again, for the very same reason that I oppose, you know, the notion of ring cameras being everywhere, that we are living this life now where every single thing we do, we have to assume is being inspected, audited, and perhaps retained forever.
But let's also remember, this is a two-way street. Look at what happened in Hong Kong a couple of years ago, where the police or these ununiformed security people burst onto a subway train and beat the living crap out of innocent people. And that was captured. That was captured on surveillance. And, you know, these things, you know, all the injustices that we see perpetrated against innocent people, a lot of it is captured by security cameras and certainly by our phones, too, which is another form of surveillance. Go ahead, Gila.
So I think, Alex, just seizing on something that you said, a lot of, as, you know, the woman here, I can say that sometimes the harassment that women face isn't going to get captured on video, because if it's just some dude, it looks like he's on his phone, but it turns out he's upskirting you, or it turns out that he's creeping on you while ostensibly playing Pokemon Go on his phone. This is just a hypothetical. It didn't happen to me. But these are things that cameras aren't going to help us find. But you guys, I have an idea.
More cameras.
Well, sort of, yeah. I think we could solve the MTA's budget problem, create unlimited content. What if the MTA and Amazon got into partnership and all the cameras on the trains were Ring cameras, thus creating unlimited content for Ring Nation, fixing the MTA's money problems? You guys, I think I may have just solved everything.
This is the one. Ring Transit. Alex, get on this one right away. Ring Transit. That's the idea. That's the show right there. Ring Transit. And you know what? It doesn't have to be in New York. It can be in Chicago. It can be in Tokyo. It can be all over the place.
Ring.
We basically record people as they do funny things on the train, and if they want to get somewhere, they have to agree to be filmed, and we get all the profit. Let's talk about this.
Swiping your MetroCard is swiping your MetroCard, or, you know, hitting your Omni or whatever, getting into the system. That is your blanket consent for being filmed.
Well, we can also put a wrap on the train that is the release, so you read as the door opens.
More advertising. Yes.
Stand clear of the closing doors. Everything you do is on camera.
Just make the button on a checkbox or something.
We come up with some great ideas on this show. Go ahead, Alex.
Another great idea. I think the title of the show can be "It's Showtime."
But I came up with Ring Transit. You don't like that?
Yeah, I think that's already used.
All right. I mean, Ring Transit, all right. But yeah, it's Showtime. A phrase all New Yorkers were familiar with who ride the subway.
All right. Believe it or not, there are other stories going on. And by the way, when we run out of time, which will be soon, you can join us at 8 o'clock on Off the Hook Overtime over on YouTube. YouTube.com/channel2600 is how you get there. And you can also just click on the link on the 2600.com webpage. And please write to us here at Off the Hook, OTH at 2600.com. And don't forget to continue supporting WBAI. Go to WBAI.org. Or give to WBAI.org, give the number to WBAI.org, and support the place so we can continue having spirited conversations like this where we test our belief systems and all sorts of other things. So, U.S. government officials are adding data from as many as 10,000 electronic devices every year to a massive database they've compiled from cell phones, iPads, and computers seized from criminals at the country's airports, seaports, and border crossings. Oh, wait, I read that wrong. I said criminals. I meant travelers. They're not criminals. The rapid expansion of the database and the ability of 2,700 Customs and Border Patrol officers to access it without a warrant, two details not previously known about the database, have raised alarms in Congress about what use the government has made of the information, much of which is captured from people not suspected of any crime. Not even suspected of any crime. CBP officials told congressional staff the data is maintained for only 15 years. Details of the database were released last Thursday in a letter to CBP Commissioner Chris Magnus from Senator Ron Wyden. Why is it always Senator Ron Wyden that's on top of these things? Why does nobody else seem to care? It's depressing. He criticized the agency for allowing indiscriminate rifling through Americans' private records and called for stronger privacy protections. I'm sorry, if you're a senator out there and I just defended you, prove me wrong, okay? Just express an interest in it and you know, stand behind Ron Wyden, because this is wrong. I mean, you know, you're at the border, you're crossing from one country to another, and they take your phone, they take your computer, and they scan it. They look through your contacts. Who knows what they do? And if you refuse, they just take it. They take it, and they can keep it for months and really go through it at that point. And that's not right. Under any circumstance, that is not right. I've never had to deal with that myself, but I imagine if I did, I would not give it up easily. I would try to wipe it probably, because, you know, regardless of what's on it, any device, it's none of their damn business. Unless you are suspected of a specific crime and you're under investigation, they should not be able to do that. Alex, is this fantasy that I'm engaged in here, or has reality changed?
It's a unique factual circumstance, I think, that we're dealing with here, where, you know, it's been called for a long time, you know, airports and borders are infamously known as Fourth Amendment free zones. And so what I see happening here is there are the CBP, Customs and Border Protection, is utilizing this essentially Fourth Amendment free zone to inspect and seize travelers' devices. And then it collects that data and it puts it into a different context. And now that that data is in, let's say, a database, or it's searchable, or it's indexable, it might be tied to a certain person's name, identity, contacts, et cetera, you're no longer storing that data within the confines of this Fourth Amendment free zone. It's now in a place that should reasonably be subject to the Fourth Amendment and should only be accessible upon the showing of probable cause, and there should be some form of judicial oversight, you know, for access to this type of data. I think the fact that it was acquired in a context where the Fourth Amendment does not necessarily have as strong a reach as it would in, let's say, your house, is just a way of the government performing an end run around our privacy rights.
But yeah, I can't say I'm surprised, and I don't think anybody should be, that the data is being abused at this stage. You know, my objection was taking the data in the first place. I feel like we've given up on that. I feel like we're saying that for some reason at the border, you don't have the same constitutional rights as you do in your home. And when did that get decided? When was it decided for us that, yeah, they can go through all your personal electronic data if you're standing over here in this country as opposed to over there?
Yeah, this whole thing is really strange, to be honest with you, because, you know, how people's devices are being seized and inspected and uploaded and data retained is something I think that these articles don't necessarily touch upon as well. And I think that, you know, that to me is a threshold issue that needs to be investigated. It's something that's been going on for a while, so it's not as sexy a story as this new database. But the very fact that, of the data collection itself is really problematic to me.
I've gotten an update, actually. Ron Wyden apparently is not the only senator who cares about this. There was a bill introduced to require, this happened last year, to require border officials to get a warrant before searching a traveler's device. And that bill was introduced by Senator Ron Wyden and also, are you ready? Senator Rand Paul. Yeah, I saw that simultaneous look of disappointment and despair on everyone's face. But, you know, occasionally he comes up with a decent idea or proposal. But everybody else, where are you? How about that? You want Rand Paul to take credit for this? Come on. We can do better. This is wrong. This is wrong. And we'd like to hear from anybody who has experienced something like this and what you went through. OTH@2600.com if you did.
Yeah, I really am interested in the notion of being secure in your papers, your documents. This is no different in the Fourth Amendment search and seizure clauses. And that stuff itself seems to me to apply regardless of the actual medium with which it's stored and whether you're going through this zone or not, just being a traveler, you should not be suspected of being a criminal. I think that is a really bad way to treat people that are going out and going across borders.
They even say they're not suspected of being a criminal. You know, what's to stop a customs agent from saying, hey, you know, she looks hot, I'd like to see her contacts, and basically just doing that because he can. You know, that's wrong, and that's an abuse. And don't be surprised when that happens, because we all know that's going to happen.
Well, and especially since this medium itself is infinitely more copyable and modifiable, like this, chain of custody, how it is physically handled, can be interfered with a lot more readily, and authenticating things. And you're creating a situation where someone who is not prepared to defend themselves, and as Alex stated, are in a historical legal zone that mm-hmm. is distinct. It's a way of victimizing people that is really, really insidious.
So we only have 1 minute left, but in that minute, ways of preventing this, if you're traveling, I mean, can you put everything on your phone onto a SIM card and just simply hide that SIM card somewhere else, or maybe swallow it and get it back in a couple of days? What do we suggest, quickly?
I've heard over the years a lot of different ways to do it, but you could have multiple devices and basically bring one that is unused to the location you're going and use secure methods to download it onto the new device once you get there.
Alex, very quickly.
Yeah, I think it would be very difficult to defeat this because it's a CBP directive that gives officers the authority to look at essentially anyone's device and scroll through it. If you refuse or try to frustrate that, your device could be seized apparently for up to 5 days. The way to do
okay, fine, but you frustrate it well beforehand and you put your data somewhere else safe to avoid this kind of thing. That's if you care about your privacy. Rob, if you can do this in 15 seconds.
Yeah, if you factory reset your phone, backing everything up first that you want to keep, but factory reset it right before your trip, then when they ask you why your phone has nothing on it, just say, I'm a nervous traveler. I don't want to lose my, you know, have my identity stolen, anything like that.
I did that once where I came through with absolutely nothing, no baggage, no phone, no nothing. And I got a weird look, but they said, okay, welcome to the USA.
Don't make something up.
We are out of time, but we're going over to YouTube overtime, channel 2600. We'll see you there, and we'll see you next week. OTH at 2600.com. Good night.
He made his way to the border in the shadow under the trees. Make up a new born color.